everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today are two very special guests. They are the authors of Lean Six Sigma for Leaders, Martin Brennick-Jones and Joe Dandel. How are you today, guys?
Hi there, very well, thank you.
Very well indeed, and lovely to be here with you.
It's great to have you on the podcast, and it is a rare occasion to have a duo podcast with two guests. So I'm looking forward to our conversation today. And of course, for our listeners, Lean Six Sigma for Leaders is the practical guide for leaders to transform the way they run their organization. And we're very happy to be talking to you guys today about the book. But before we get into the meat and the discussion about the themes and ideas of it, can you perhaps tell us what was your inspiration behind a book, and perhaps a bit about yourselves as well?
Okay, shall I kick off?
Yes, please.
So I do quite a few executive workshops these days, and meeting with senior executives. I felt that there was a little gap in the market for a book around Lean Six Sigma focused on the leader's requirements. There's a lot of technical books out there covering Lean and Six Sigma, and sometimes they can put people off, actually, and I felt that there was a need for a book which really related to what leaders are really looking for. How can they get more out of this? How can they understand this approach? And also to have some good case studies in there as well, so they could see what other leaders are doing in other organisations.
Yeah, and if I can add to that, we wanted to show that Lean Six Sigma has a value above and beyond just problem solving. A lot of people know about the DMAIC methodology, define, measure, analyze, improve and control, but they perhaps don't know so much about the principles of Lean Six Sigma and how they can be used to drive leadership approaches and also help people to do things like align projects and programs with what matters most in an organization, deploy a strategy, you know, build in other methodologies and approaches like agile. You know, it all comes under the Lean Six Sigma banner, and it gets forgotten about, really. I guess those other
opportunities,
other applications of Lean Six Sigma.
Yeah.
Great, perfect. And let's get into it, because a continuous and sort of sustainable framework has been a difficult thing to obtain for a lot of different types of organizations, regardless of size, regardless of how long they've been around or what they're trying to do. What, in your opinions, are the main factors behind this, and what's the driving force for this issue?
Yeah, I think that's I think that's a really good question. And again, it's really emphasizing the point about leadership and the key role that leaders have got. So we wanted to get across the point, particularly with some of the case studies where, you know, for example, Kevin Barrett from CooperVision, who's now, they're now the second biggest contact lens manufacturer in the world. And he runs the manufacturing operations across Europe. And I felt in talking to Kevin, you know, that this was a deeply held belief and understanding about this kind of approach, which goes beyond kind of, you know, Lean Six Sigma sounds like a very technical thing, but actually this is about what you really believe in, about you making most use of employees to get the release of potential that they've got, to make places really enjoyable places for people to work in, you know, to be great for customers, all these things. But of course, you're right, you know, the danger is that you can kind of kick off an initiative and it really works well for a year or two, and then the danger is it kind of goes down. So the question is, you know, why is it like that? You know, why? What, how can we avoid that happening? And again, back to the whole piece about, you know, leadership commitment, getting to the point where you've built a culture of, you know, it's kind of continuous improvement, really into the DNA of the organization, so that even when a leader moves on, and that's the ultimate test, you know, will this initiative continue? And in fact, it doesn't become an initiative anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was just thinking about Lean Six Sigma. Some organisations might see it as a thing to do. But, you know, when we've worked with the leaders that have really taken it to heart, they're using Lean Six Sigma to do the things that they need to do, you know, as a way of delivering the things that matter most, rather than just an add-on or a bolt-on, you know, to the things that they have in their business plans and their strategies.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd like to circle back a tiny bit, because you've given us a great overview of what happens within organizations that try to adopt this model and as or other similar models. And as you say, within a year or two, there might be something that's happening and there might be issues to fix or things to do. But for those of our listeners who are not necessarily all that familiar with the concept to begin with, can you perhaps give us a very brief overview of the Lean Six Sigma model, and perhaps what does it encompass overall?
Okay, so Lean Six Sigma is a blend of two methodologies, really. The first is Lean, which has its origins in Japan with the Toyota production system, all about a lean, smooth process journey from A to B, about taking out waste, about taking out things that don't add value. So lots of learnings from in the East. And Sigma has its origins in the United States with the likes of Motorola and General Electric. And the Sigma side of things is really about managing processes that so that they can deliver right first time, every time. So the end result of a process, the output of a process, is consistent and reliable. So we have the efficient side of things with Lean. We have the effective side of things with Six Sigma. So bringing those together can help you to achieve both of those things, so being efficient and effective. At the heart of that, there's a series of steps that we called AMAIC, which is not the friendliest of acronyms, really, but this is the roadmap, really, for delivering a project through those stages to deliver the benefits and solve real practical process problems in an organisation.
Yeah, and if I can add to that, I mean, what we've done over the last few years, we've seen the integration of a number of change management tools and techniques into Lean Six Sigma as well, so it becomes, you know, it's as important as anything around the people side, you know, getting people to buy and accept, understand, because after all, if we are talking about changing the way that organizations work, then potentially that can be quite threatening for people, and we need to allay those fears. We need to get people involved, people who do the work on an everyday basis, involved in continuous improvement activities, so that they feel enthusiastic, they feel supported as well by leadership. And when you start to do that, then amazing things start to happen, actually. And we've seen that in so many different cases. It's brilliant if you can get that kind of opportunity where you get people really engaged. You know, we do a lot of programs, don't we, where we've taken people through just a one-day introduction. Yeah. And sometimes people come into the room and they're feeling a little bit kind of, you know, oh, what's this
right,
all about,
yeah.
You know. And then we go through and basically take them through some games and activities, and when they go out the other side, they're feeling very chirpy, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of people as well think Lean Six Sigma is all about tools and techniques. There are lots of tools and techniques, aren't there, that come with it. But the principles are really important as well. So things like focus on the customer, things like involving people, as Martin said. Principles like using data to drive decision making. So not just coming up with, you know, the easiest thing to do or the cheapest thing to do, or, you know, the thing that, you know, the stakeholder with the loudest voice is talking about, but using data to drive that so you're making the right decisions for the right reasons, really.
I think that problem solving thing is really good as well, because a lot of leaders have a tendency to jump straight to a solution because they kind of, they may think they know the answer, but okay, if they really do know the answer and it's great, fine, go ahead and do it. But often it's more complicated than that. It needs bigger, kind of deeper digging diagnosis, really, to find out what's really going on and get beyond the symptoms into the root causes of problems. And when we do that and introduce them to the way to tackle those kind of problems, those business problems, sometimes the discovery is amazing. You know, people find things that they had not realized before because they're looking at the way the work is done in a different way, and it becomes very visual, so they can see things, and they're almost like these aha moments of discovery that, oh, that's how it's done at the moment, is
right,
it? My
yeah.
goodness me. Well, we can soon sort that out. And actually, maybe the solution is a lot simpler than they had previously thought.
Right. And this is sort of my next point of discussion with you guys. And that's more of the day-to-day of actually implementing these aspects. And for those listening, you know, how can they begin to do this as they go into the office and they've decided they want to do this change, they want to move forward? What are the day-to-day aspects? What can they do to begin facilitating this?
We call this everyday operational excellence, don't we, Jane?
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't have to be a big thing. Some organisations don't even call it Lean Six Sigma. You know, it comes under a number of names, doesn't it? Continuous improvement is really what we're talking about. So it doesn't have to be big things, you know, even finding something, finding an opportunity to take 5 minutes out of a process, or to remove a step that doesn't add value, or to reduce the amount of, you know, times that we just move stuff around in our processes and we're not really adding to anything that happens in the process. Things like sign off and authorization in processes can be quite controversial sometimes, can't they, when we talk about this, and people feel there's a safety, I suppose, associated with, well, one of our process steps will be to have the, you know, the manager of the department sign something off. But actually, is that really necessary? And can we empower people and develop a process that's robust enough so that we don't have to check and have sign-offs within? So finding those little opportunities in processes, I think, is really important, and everyone can be on the lookout for this.
It's really got to be, as you say, removing the frustrations, you know, that people have in work. Making work a better place to be, and, you know, not just thinking, well, this is the way it's done and that's not my position to be able to challenge the status quo. Giving people the opportunity to do that challenge and then look at making change happen. So kind of removing the friction as well. And it applies to customers just as much as well. So customers get frustrated, you know, with the way they're having to deal with organisations sometimes. You think, oh, God, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way. And there is a better way. And this, I think, gives you the kind of tools and techniques and the methods and the, as you said, Joe, the principles, so you can apply this kind of thinking in any type of organisation. And I think that's the other thing I just want to emphasise, by the way, that, you know, people worry about the name, you know, Lean Six Sigma, and we've often said when we'd like to call it almost the book, you know, Lean Six Sigma, or whatever you want to call it. For
right,
years.
Right.
And it's not just about, you know, manufacturing or anything like that, because that's one of the misnomers, I think, one of the myths of the whole approach, because some of the roots have come from that kind of background. But I think nowadays we're tending to find, you know, a lot more of the organisations that we're working in are in, you know, transactional service, financial, government, you know, public sector, local authorities, you know, anywhere really where there's a lot of frustration out there, and you think, oh, crikey, there's got to be a better way of doing things.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to follow up on that, do you think that perhaps this is an issue that's often seen more in larger organisations? As you say, you know, the need to sign up on many different things and go through a more bureaucratic process where perhaps smaller companies are quicker to make that decision making? Or do you think that it can affect anyone at any time?
If I can jump in there quickly, I mean, I think that's a really good question. Traditionally, you would think that, but even some of the smaller organisations, surprisingly, can get kind of wrapped up in process. Perhaps they've started off small, and it's just been a few entrepreneurs get together and we kind of make it up as we go. As they get a little bit bigger, they get to the point where they do need to have kind of almost like systems in place, systems thinking, systems approach, dare I say the word processes in place. But they've got to be nimble, they've got to be agile, they've got to be the kind of processes that people feel are helpful rather than a hindrance. So I think it does apply in small organisations. Yeah, and we've seen that working really well. It can be great fun actually working with some of these small organisations as well, because you tend to get the leadership very much in touch with the day-to-day operations as well. So you can get your head around the whole thing. So it's really good. Bigger organisations, I think, over time, processes become, they're not clearly owned very often, you know. Who owns the process? I'm not quite sure. Then the processes, you know, the way that work gets done, that's what we mean by process, tend to get neglected over time, you know, and other bits get added on. Perhaps something goes wrong, somebody says from now on, you know, I need to put everything through this extra step in the process to validate things, and all you end up with is an overly complex process. So it's a great opportunity to clean them all out and, you know, have a look at it. But I think, yeah, when we think about large organizations, unnecessary steps in processes that have added in over time, with the best will in the world, but, you know, overall, when you stand back and look at an end-to-end process and you go, oh my God, is that the way we do things?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's the word that we use often, which some people don't like, which is standardisation. So kind of a learning from the Toyota production system, where kind of standardisation is one of the basic kind of pillars, wasn't it, really, fundamentals.
If you find a really good way of doing something, you know, then, you know, why not standardise on the approach? You know, but that doesn't mean that you can't be flexible as well.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people say, well, it'd be, you know, I can see how that applies if I was making widgets. But actually, processes, there are a series of steps that should be replicated. And actually, anyone from Toyota would tell you, if you haven't got standardisation, you can never really make an improvement to a process. Imagine a situation where you have 8 or 9 people in a team and they're all going about an activity in a slightly different way. Then one person learns about Lean Six Sigma and makes an improvement to that process. But unless you standardise it, all you have now is another way of going about that process. So can everybody learn this better way to do it, this improved way, so we can deliver the benefits and share the benefits, you know, across organisations in that way?
I think the best, the best examples are places where you've got that kind of feeling that people can get involved and make suggestions for changes. Mm. But when those changes are adopted, then they become the way to do things across the, you know, the whole organisation. And I remember years ago when I was studying all these different organisations, and I tripped upon Richard Sands, and the guy who runs that organisation. I think, you know, he's really interesting how he used that approach, get people involved, get employees involved. I think it's Julian Richard, is it? And so really interesting approaches, but then standardise across the whole, you know, all these shops and things. And very successful.
Mm. Yeah, and on that note, can you perhaps give us an example or a case study that implemented a framework, and what was the result within your research and within your work?
Just one that comes to mind for me is working with an international bank, and they were looking at the process that they had for bringing on new suppliers. Now that sounds fairly straightforward, but actually when they mapped the process out, it was a bit of an eye-opener. A lot of steps in the process, a lot of people involved in that process, and it was taking a long time as well, and generally a lot of dissatisfaction along the way as well. So the suppliers weren't very happy about it, and actually the people in the organization who wanted to use these new suppliers for doing things weren't that happy about it either, because it was taking too long, you know, so the process was taking too long. It was costing too much money because there were too many steps involved, too many people involved. And so the way they tackled that really was we ran a series of facilitated workshops looking at the steps in the process. It became very clear during that during the steps to think about, you know, where can we simplify it, how can we simplify it, how we can make the whole thing a lot quicker, a lot easier, remove the duplication, and basically reduce the overall, what we call the cycle time, how long it takes to, you know, from start to end of the process. So that kind of example, I think, is typical we're seeing these days. You know, recruitment, another one, you know, recruitment. So that was bringing on new suppliers, recruiting people into an organization. There's another area that people have looked at. People have looked at, operational day-to-day processes.
Last year I helped a lady look at the complaints process, the customer complaints process in her organisation, and it had a 3-tier approach. And this lady proved with data what we've always suspected, actually, which was the more senior a person that gets involved in the customer complaint, the longer it takes to resolve. So she was successful in removing one of those steps. So it's now a 2-tier escalation kind of process, which has taken weeks, really, of the process, and able to get answers back to the customers far quicker. And actually it doesn't tie up managers' time either, so managers can be doing the value-adding things that they need to do, and people feel empowered to give a good response to a customer, and they kind of have the tools and techniques at their fingertips to do so.
So many different types of examples, you know, the more you think about it. It was like, you know, if you take we worked with a forensic science organization, and it was taking an awful long time for them to do a particular analysis, a drugs analysis, a technical process. The scientists involved there, you know, felt that it would be impossible to speed the whole thing up, but actually they reduced it by, I think it was about 50%, something quite incredible, actually. So, you know, we see these kind of things happening, you know, reduction in how long it takes to do things, making it easier, but making the things flow more freely through, you know, if you imagine things going through a process. And it applies to management, the world of management as well. So, for example, there was a case where a monthly report was produced for the senior management team, and it was something like 70 pages long.
Wow, monthly?
Yeah, monthly report, 70 pages. And there were suspicions, and an awful lot of work went into producing this report. There were suspicions that, did it really get used that well? You know, was there something that was being used?
Did it get read even?
Did it get read?
Half the time, yeah.
And I think suspicions were proved very true, and they could reduce the size of this down dramatically, and actually make the the whole thing much more visual, much more, you know, rapid fire. You can see what's going on very quickly. So this idea of visual management, so you can see on a day-to-day basis, you know, how are you doing? Are you winning? Are you losing in terms of this part of the organization? These kind of tools and techniques can really help you on that kind of day-to-day stuff as well. But at the same time, reduce the amount of time people are spending on doing this, what we call non-value add activities. We've come up, I'm not sure whether we've invented an acronym, but I'm not sure whether we should mention this, but there's this whole thing about wastes, different types of wastes. And Toyota have this idea of seven wastes, okay. But we tend to use the idea of the wombat, which is a waste of money, brains and time.
Right. Yeah, that makes absolute perfect sense.
Yeah, so yeah. Just an example of a wombat we came across last year. We talked to a group of people, and in that group was a lady that puts a report together on Excel every Friday and circulates it to about 35 people. And she had suspicions, are people really reading this report? So she password protected it for 3 weeks, and in that period of time, nobody asked her for the password. Wow. So this proved to be a wombat, and it's now not being done anymore. So freeing up some time. And allowing people to spend time on things that do add value.
Yeah, and of course, any time spent, it is then converted into, well, resources and money. So, of course, if nobody's reading it, then there's probably no point in it existing.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to circle back to the book itself, because it's always very fascinating to me when I have more than one author on a podcast. And perhaps you can share your experience of what was it like to have, you know, co-authoring with another author and kind of working together and putting the whole thing into a book. What was the process like for you guys?
It was really good. I kicked it off, and I've been involved in writing. I was the co-author of Lean Six Sigma for Dummies, which is the under the Dummies series with Wiley Publishing, and so they asked if I'd be interested in writing this. I kind of took the subject, but you know, started to build the framework and everything. But you know, it's really good working with somebody else because you can bounce ideas around. And you know, we talk about, you know, the co-editing and co-writing of once we got the structure and the chapters. You know, you can comment on that.
Yeah, so great fun working together. You don't really realise what goes into making a book before you've made one, really. So lots of hours spent at the desk, but also just really good, fun discussions, really, talking about ideas, talking about the structure, talking about, the content, and bringing some real life examples into things.
Great, perfect. And to follow up, unless you have another comment.
No, I was just thinking, because the editing, it got to the point where we didn't really know who'd written what in the end of it. Because
yeah.
It
was, wow.
Yeah, we work together quite a bit, don't we? And we've done some training sessions together, so we kind of know what each other's going to say sometimes.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I mean, it was good as well to bring in other guest authors for chapters as well, so and obviously the case studies as well to bring the whole thing to life. So there's been a bit of orchestrating going on.
And we have an O-star cast in the final product.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
I'd like to take this opportunity actually to thank everybody who's been involved in it, you know, in their bit, because what makes it all come together, really.
Great, perfect. And the question I ask anyone that actually comes on a podcast is, what are you actually currently reading, and do you have any recommendations for our listeners?
What are you currently reading? Well, I'm just about to go on holiday, actually, so I'm going to be reading something which is definitely nothing to do with, Lean Six Sigma.
Well, that's perfectly fine, yeah.
I need to get back into fiction, really, because I haven't had enough time to read fiction, so there's a list about that long.
Oh, wow.
really, how about you?
I'm reading Carrie Fisher's autobiography called Wishful Drinking. It's very funny.
Yeah, that's really good.
Not so much Lean Six Sigma in there.
Well, of course, for our listeners, we can put a link in the description below. So if you would like to read the autobiography, you can by all means do so. But with that, I'd like to thank you very much today for joining me on a podcast, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
And of course, for our listeners, if you enjoyed our conversation today, there will be links in the description below where you can find out everything about what we talked about, and of course, links to the book, social media profiles where you can reach out to us, and of course, to the authors, and tell us what you think about today's podcast. Give us any feedback. We're always very excited to hear what you think. And as always, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us today on this week's episode of Lit Radio, and we look forward to seeing you next week.